Welcome, everybody. I'm hoping you can hear me. If you would, please type. And I see that you're looking at the just for fun that I put up. Thanks for responding. And hoping you all can hear me and welcome. It's feeling more and more like spring in my part of the world, which is really awesome. I'm up in the Northeast, and boy, it is great to have sunshine and warmer weather. So. Donna says, weather and longer days. Yes, I love the longer days. And Chrissy is here. Thanks for being here. I see Chris and Donna. Dana, I'm going to have you correct me in the correct pronunciation of your name. And Donna Moriarty is here. Glad you're here. Lanaire, Margot, Melissa. Peggy, we've got a nice group today. This is great. Wendy's here. I see a couple of people. I've got a number of people that have dialed in just by telephone, so can't see your names, but glad you're here. And Lois, great to have you. I got it correct. All right. On the first try. Thank you. All right. Let me see. I love not having to wear, Margo says, not having to wear a bulky coat. I know, taking off, not having to layer, so many. And Donna says, from Boston, but I live near Silver Spring, Maryland now. That's great. And we have our special guest today. Ed Gandia is joining us, and he loves the ability to have a glass of rosé on the patio once the weather warms up. Next time I'm in Atlanta, I'll swing by and join you. Melissa is reading a book on her back porch while the birds sing. Ah, the birds have been so, so talkative. They can tell it's spring, too. Yes, wine and grilling. And Donna says she bought new sunglasses today. It must be spring if you're buying sunglasses. Awesome. Well, welcome, everybody. Glad you're all here. We have a nice big group today, which we were anticipating. And so I'm excited to have a lot of people here. And we have a list of pre-submitted questions we're going to be talking about, but we're going to do things a little bit differently for this group. Today, I'm actually going to be going through this slide deck, and I'm going to switch to the next slide now so that you can see it. And this is just a standard way that we run a lot of our other calls for coaching, but when there's more people on the call, which we expected today, we like to do things a little bit differently. So I'm going to start with asking you to share a win, big or small. If you would, in the chat, type in a capital W, and then tell us what you're celebrating so we can celebrate with you. All right. And Dana, I see that you asked a question. Do you need to submit a question? Actually, you can pre-submit. Sometimes if members of this group are not going to be in attendance, they'll pre-submit a question so that we can answer it because the call is recorded. And that way they can listen to it afterwards on their own time. But no, you don't have to pre-submit. I will a little bit later in the call, I'll open it up and ask for people to submit a question, and then we'll bring you on if need be and help you work through it. So Lois posted a win, was just asked to provide a quote for a new client for 4 items. Wow. Congratulations, Lois. That's great. Margot said she's joined the academy. That is a win. Good for you, and you're a newbie, and this is your first call. Well, welcome. And Donna says, I got a project worth around $15,000 today from my best client, which I pitched. Love those best clients. Congratulations. That's terrific. That's a nice size project. Good for you. Donna says, threw out a computer from the 1980s. Oh, my goodness. My son had a habit as a high schooler of collecting everybody's computers. So, yeah, I've been doing that for years, but good for you. Oh, my goodness. Lanier says, new clients inquiring about and signing up to my LinkedIn marketing program. Congratulations. Good for you. Chris says, persistence has paid off with a new lead. It may lead to eventual work. Good for you. And Melissa says she started 2 website copy projects this week for new clients. That's awesome. It's wonderful when you get started getting work. Sometimes it kind of comes in groups like that where it's kind of opens the floodgates sometime. Shannon says she increased her rates and added an add-on onto a proposal and won it anyway. Good for you. Yay. We love it when we see people increasing their rates intentionally and mindfully. I think that's terrific. And it feels good just to get hired at a stronger rate. So good for you. Wendy said that she replied to a LinkedIn ProFinder request, something I really do true, and got the gig writing content for a super cool startup. Wow. You know, the LinkedIn ProFinder is an interesting thing. I once in a while will reach out and respond to them, but not super often. I have actually gotten some interesting work out of that too. So you just never know. You just have to be, discerning when you're answering those. All right. Nice win. All right, Ted. Welcome, Ted. I see that you picked up a project from a new client who I've been prospecting for 9 months. Woo! And it paid off. Good for you. Finally came around. That's terrific. Wow. Well, we've got now quite a few people on here. Let me just take a quick look. Charlie has joined us. Welcome, Charlie. Jean. Peggy is here. Renee. Robin. There's another name that I don't recognize. It's not really a name. User one. Not sure who that is. Monica, Jerry, Rob. Wow, quite a group today. Well, I'm so glad you're all here. This is exciting, really exciting. Rob says, celebrating an almost complete lack of work, except for a couple of blog article projects. I have nothing. My biggest problem right now is waiting for the so-called machine to make its so-called mind. I can't get any of my clients to commit to doing any of their projects. Challenging spot. Challenging spot. Maybe we can, if we have time, we've got a lot of people on the call today, so we're going to be doing our best to get to everyone. We have a couple of pre-submitted questions that we're going to tackle first, and then we will open it up and have you folks submit questions as well via the chat box. So I'll let you know when we get there. But I'm going to jump onto the next slide. I would love to hear if there's anything in particular that you're implementing right now in the program. Type in a capital I in the chat and just let us know. Is there anything in particular that you're implementing, working on, focusing on right now? All right. Donna says she's warm email prospecting and content development. Donna says setting up retainer projects, warm emails and follow-ups. Great. Melissa is LinkedIn prospecting, starting to track and follow up with not yet ready leads. That's great. LinkedIn's a great tool for that. Wendy says she's working on a new lead magnet to use with her LinkedIn prospecting. Nice. And Melissa says she's also working on positioning and updating her website. Great stuff. Great. All right. Shannon is warm email prospecting, and Lois said updating her website and repositioning with a new elevator pitch. Yes, Lois, I saw you submitted a question, so we'll get around to that today for you. Monica said she's going through the unit on marketing and will start writing blog and newsletter. Good for you. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to jump right into questions because we have a number of them. We also have a lot of people on the line today, so we want to really welcome you all and welcome you all to the call, and glad you're here and want to kind of dive right in. And as I mentioned, we have our super special guest today. Ed has joined us to welcome you all also at actually, Ed, where are you? I'm going to unmute you, Ed.
Yeah. Hey, Susan. Hello everybody. Hello. It's great to be here, guys. And wow, awesome turnout. We got a lot of stuff, so I don't really have anything for you guys. I know we want to get to Q&A, but, you know, I'll certainly chime in and, you know, offer some ideas too as needed, but, just wanted to officially welcome everybody. I'm really happy that we're starting this monthly call for you guys as a service to you guys.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to dive right in and start with Nicole. I'm looking to see, and Nicole, I don't see your name on the list here, so I'm not sure if you're on the call, but I'm going to read her question. And her question was pre-submitted, and she said, I'd like some ideas for other areas to market in. I'm working for B2B companies and have been mostly focusing my efforts on prospecting to corporate wellness companies due to my background in fitness. But I'm still new and don't want to limit my options and want to work in other markets as well. Can you suggest some other B2B niches that I can market in? And I'm not sure. And take another quick look. I did have a question for Nicole in terms of clarifying a little bit more about her background and some of the other things that she's considered, some of the other niches that she's considered. And I think in the beginning, one of the things that's hardest, especially if you're fairly new and you're just getting started, and I don't know, that was another question I had for Nicole, would be how long has she been at this? How long has she been focusing on just the corporate wellness companies and things like that? There's a couple different things that you can consider if you're in, find yourself in the same situation. You've started in a particular niche and maybe you're feeling like it's not going as quickly, or maybe you're feeling like there's not as many target companies to reach out to. There's a couple different directions that you can head with that. And the first thing is to look at the size of company that you're currently targeting to see if you can move up or down a little ways. So let's say you're looking at a mid-market company, maybe a company that's maybe you've been focusing on maybe, I don't know, companies with maybe 50 employees or less, something like that. You could take a look up the vertical, if you will, and look at companies that maybe have a couple hundred employees, or maybe you started there and not finding the traction you were hoping for. You can also look down a little and see, is there a smaller company, sub-segment of company that you might be able to tap? So the first thing to do would be to stay within that same market and just see, is there any place in any other direction that I might be able to head? And I think, too, in the corporate wellness, I think that takes on a lot of different forms. So depending on the industry that you're in, looking at what are things that are similar, what are things that corporate wellness can take on so many forms. And I know I've seen that in a number of different companies. It's not just health. It might be mental health. It might be, physical well-being. It might be diet and those types of things. So corporate wellness can be across the board a little more broad as well. So you could start looking at companies that are, maybe broaden it that way, horizontally almost, is that companies that are targeting that same type of audience and offering something for the well-being of their employees, which I believe is what she would be focusing on. So, and Ed, if you want to jump in, I don't know if you have anything else to add in terms.
I did. It's a really good question, and I'm actually going to challenge Nicole to think about the question a little bit differently. So, she's asking, look, I'm right now focused in this area, but what other markets should I consider? I think you're asking the wrong question. I mean that in a very respectful way, okay? The right question is, what do I have in my background that when I write down an inventory of my experience, my skills, track record, my professional background, when I do this full inventory, I can highlight those that are attractive to me, and it seem to be markets that are doing quite a bit of content marketing or writing a lot of marketing materials. So really, she's starting from what markets are hot, when the question should be, let's first do a personal and professional inventory and see how that maps into markets that seem to be really in the content marketing bandwagon. Just, you know what I'm saying, Susan? It's like working backwards as opposed to trying to find the hot areas.
Right, exactly. So, and I think just in maintaining your uniqueness as well, it's, you know, looking at, because I think people tend to overlook what is unique about them. It's what their core differentiator is. And I think that's a good way to kind of bring yourself back to, okay, what have I got in my background that, that I can leverage?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the way to go about it, because the moment you start going after, hot markets, I think that's kind of that's the wrong approach. And there are a lot of risks with that. It's, you know, you're just following something and then you risk continuing to chase the hot new thing, as opposed to, let me start with the fundamentals. Let me start with what I can bring to the table.
Right.
And then see how that maps into markets that might be willing to work with me.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I wish she was on the line, because we both have some questions. I think we could help, you know, just clarify that for her a little bit more, but I like that. So thanks. All right. Going to move right along to the next question, which actually was from Lois, and Lois is on the call today. So I'm going to just read part of your question in what you submitted. I've been freelancing for more than 5 years. In the past year, I've lost a few clients, just normal attrition. I've since gained a couple clients. I'm doing sporadic work for a local marketing agency, and my strength is in journalism. But I've been writing everything web, from web copy to video scripts, brochure copy, and so on, and articles for a 12-page promotional magazine. She says she's working through Ed's templates now, but I feel like I haven't gotten my value proposition quite right. And then she goes on to share what she has on her website. But I think it sounds to me like, I'm not 100% sure what your question is. I think you're questioning the value proposition part of this. So Lois, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you and just ask you to clarify this a little bit for us, if you would. Lois, are you there?
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi.
So
can you hear me?
I can. We can.
Good. I'm all the way up here in Canada in Gray County. We still have snow on the ground.
I bet. Well, spring is on its way, definitely. Yeah. So
I just want to see if it's a compelling value proposition that what I have on the website now. I'm thinking about pivoting a little bit towards maybe more towards food manufacturing, because I'm not really making a whole lot of money on the agriculture side. So, and journalism sucks in terms of pay. Like, I think anybody can tell you that. So, mostly I want to home in on something that's a little sharper and I think it's pretty good now. I really like the egg side of things, but I've been doing it for 25 years. So I'm just in this process of maybe pivoting over.
Sure. And, you know, considering you've been doing it for a while, there's no harm in pivoting. But tell me a little bit about your background. How would you explain to a prospect in the food, and you called it food manufacturing, how would you explain how your background would be helpful? Tell me a little bit about how you would position that.
Well, with 25 years of writing in the industry, I have a strong background I have a strong network and contacts in the industry, and I can hit the ground running with how the language is used, and understand the needs of the people who want products in the industry. I haven't quite got the elevator pitch down, as you can tell.
Understood. No, and I kind of called you out there a little bit just to kind of get a sense of what you were thinking, because there's my other question to you would be, how do you see that? You made a comment earlier about how journalism doesn't pay well. Do you see the food marketing industry having more of a demand for this type of service, for what you're offering?
I think so. I think that people like they, okay, consumers are looking for not only how the food's made, but also who makes it, are they trustworthy? And with my journalism background, I can be very factual in terms of coffee that anybody needs. So I think that's one of my strengths. I'm also really good at pulling together very complex ideas and making it into plain language and making it digestible to the public. So,
sure. Sure. Well, one of the things about pivoting is that what I would recommend is because you're looking at this is a really slight pivot based on what you have on your website. And it's almost like a lot of times we recommend that you do a little testing, like try this, go okay. In a different direction for a little while, give yourself some time to market, to prospect, to, you know, reach out, make some phone calls, make some connections and see where it leads. Cause sometimes you get a sense, okay, I think I want to pivot. I think this is a better direction for me, but you're still unsure. And that's not uncommon. So it's a matter of just make a few calls, see what happens and definitely see what kind of needs, because there's going to be a little bit of research on your part. You might be reaching out to just say, tell me what kinds of writing needs you have. And how do you solve that? How do you meet those needs? Is it in-house? Is it, you know, do you hire freelancers? You know, you're asking a lot of the same questions, but just to a different audience and finding what kind of, are their answers different? You know, do they not use freelancers? How much of that is, you know, is actually going on? And, but it's a little bit of trial and error, I think, when you start to head in a new direction.
Okay.
And Ed, I don't know if you have anything to add for.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Susan. And I actually like the way you have it in here, Lois. So I think Susan is right, though. Like, test it. These things, you know, we could do all this internal work, but we really won't know until we put it out there. The good thing is you're not manufacturing this. Like, this is, you have this experience. So I think you've done a really good job of aligning what you have with what this market is looking for, and you understand the market well. You can talk to talk, like you said, you can hit the ground running. So I think this is a really good thing to put out there and see how it goes.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks.
Definitely keep us posted in the Facebook group as you. You know, as you try this and you go out and let us all know how it's going. Keep us up to date. All right. Thank you, Lois. I know you submitted another question. I want to go through everyone else's first, Lois, before we come back to yours. So I'm going to move on to Donna. Donna submitted a question. She said, hi, everybody. So glad to be back on the live coaching call. Her question is about scope creep, and this is a great question because I think it's something that all of us deal with. I've been working with a client who needs copy for his website. We agreed to a flat fee range at the beginning, and when I reached the point that the fee needed to be adjusted to the top of the range, he pushed back. He didn't dispute the fact that the work had gone beyond the original scope. It was my method of determining scope creep, which is tracking my hours even when the job is flat. A flat fee. He eventually agreed to the upper range and even contracted for more, but now I'm very wary. The original agreement was fuzzy and the new scope one is just as fuzzy. I admit I was intimidated and said yes to the first sign of a concession. So you're thinking maybe your question is just as much about careful agreements as scope creep. It's a great question. And I have no doubt that many people on the call have had to deal with this. So Donna, I'm going to unmute you.
Okay. Hi, everybody.
Hello there. Thank you so much for the question. Great question.
Yeah.
I wanted to just ask you a little bit about, let me see. You said he agreed to a higher rate. He also asked for more work from you, but now you're feeling a little wary. What about it is making you uncomfortable? Is it the fact that you feel it's no clearer? The new agreement is no clearer than the new one?
I guess there's two parts to it. One is that, I don't know if it was just a breakdown in communication or what it was, but I mean, for me to have I told him, well, the reason why I'm saying that we're at the upper range now is because I count my hours all the time. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, that's not a good way to do it. And he's the executive coach, and he said, I'm going to coach you a little bit now, okay? And I was like, okay.
I love it.
And I really wish I don't know. I intimidated this operating worker. I want to see it. So his preferred method was to say, you know, well, we have gone beyond the scope. And I guess that's something that I have something in my agreements that's called scope of work. You know what? The more I think about this, the more I realize it, the second part of what you said is that it really has to do with being careful with how you set up your agreements, because
right.
I've been able to rely on pretty, you know, loosely worded things up until now. This is the first time I've run into a problem, but you know, I expect to run into it again in one form or another. So maybe this isn't so much about the scope creep, but I do have a feeling that, the offer that I made, you know, the counter offer or suggestion that I made was that, you know, I gave him a new, an opportunity to do the new work either on a flat rate or by the hour. And of course he snapped up the flat rate because he's like a scope creep.
Yeah.
Did I say that out loud? Sorry.
Yeah.
So I guess some of this is right. You want a specific question. I think the most useful, conversation that I would like to have with you is, you know, how do you really, you know, without, you know, hiring a lawyer, how do you make sure that you're protected in an agreement, not just in, you know, watching out for vagueness of language and different ways of interpreting how things will change, but also in when things do change, how do you approach telling the person it's going to cost you more money?
Yeah, great question. Great question. Well, you know, it's interesting because someone had asked in the Facebook group, I don't know if it was this one, about this. And so I always think of it, I take it from the perspective of what could possibly go wrong. I don't want to be negative, but when I get an opportunity to create a contract, for a project like this, I think, what could possibly go wrong? What are all the things that I could possibly think of that could go wrong? And then I build that into my price, because scope creep is a fact, of life. And I think we all have it. So I look at what do I think the potential issues are? And then that becomes part of, if this happens, if you want to add more, let's say it's a website project and you suddenly decided you want four more pages, well, obviously that's outside the scope of what we agreed on. So if there's any way to list out, these are things that would be outside of this project. This project includes these things. These things are optional, but they are outside of this project proposal, right? So you're being really clear about here's what this project includes from my perspective. Here's some extras that you might want, but are not included. And so you're just making sure. And so it's clear that, oh, well, I did say I'd be happy to do that for you, but that's outside of what we originally agreed on. So it just makes it, you know, I try to be clear as possible. It really depends on the project. It depends on the client. You know, there's a lot of things, but I think creating a good document up front that really does protect you. And you don't have to list every single thing, but you could say the kinds of items that would be outside of the scope, for example, would be X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Right? And so then maybe it even brings up, the other thing is I'm a big fan of explaining these things, you know, talking about, by the way, I sent you the proposal. One of the things I just want to call to your attention is these are the kinds of things that I've been here before. These are the kinds of things that end up getting, sometimes can grow, and I'm happy to accommodate, but just know that that will be at an additional cost. And really manage the client. This is about managing the client well, right up front. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what's going to cost you more. Are you okay with that? Great, let's go. So it's really just doing a good job of managing their expectations up front. I think, you know, this is, I'm glad that, this client of yours is a coach. It's funny because he's, you know, kind of coaching you on this. But it's a great learning. It's a great learning for you to step back and say, okay, I don't want to have this happen again. How do I prevent it? So, that would probably be the number one thing I would recommend is to put some language in there. Do you have to hire a lawyer? Not necessarily. You just want to cover yourself. Think about covering yourself in this. If you feel more comfortable hiring an attorney, absolutely do it. And, you know, I've over the years, you know, built a contract and kind of tweaked it. And have I had an attorney look at it? Yes, but a long time ago. So, you know, the core legal language that needs to be in there, I'm comfortable with. This kind of an addendum, if you will, it doesn't need to necessarily, you can kind of play with that a little bit more because it's so specific to the kind of project that you're proposing, that you're working under.
Hey, and Susan and Donna, if I may offer a suggestion too. Here's a way you can avoid this from happening in many projects where the scope is a little bit muddy, right? So let's take a website. I think you said this is a website, right?
Yeah.
So many times the problem with a website is you're not really sure, and the client's not 100% sure exactly which pages, how much content, right, what it's going to look like. They just know they need a website. So I like to think of it in terms of businesses that you're familiar with, or that, like, how would, let's just take a landscape architect, a landscaping company. I just know that I want my backyard looking better. I want some trees, and I have some ideas. I want some trees. I want some shrubs. I want kind of I want to block my neighbor, so we can have more privacy, and I want some color. Now, what did I just do? I give them an idea of what outcome I wanted, but did I actually scope it out? Not really, right?
Yeah.
So a good landscape architect is going to say, great, Mr. Gandia, here's the way we should do this. I'm going to bring in a designer, and we're going to work with you to create a design for your backyard. And the fee for that is $250. And then once we have that, then I can go ahead and quote you what the installation and the materials for that would be. I can give you something very specific as opposed to, okay, based on what you just told me, we're looking at about 12,000, you know, because, okay, so let's take that scenario. It's 12,000. And then I go ahead and start. And then how would you feel if they told you, you know, I'm glad you're happy. I'm glad this is looking great, but listen, this is taking us a little bit longer than we thought. And not only that, but we've actually used more azaleas than we imagined. We're going to have to charge that, right? We wouldn't take that.
No.
So the whole reason to give a fixed fee is for you to take some of the risk. The way you can eliminate those risks is by scoping it out first. So essentially, let's take a step back. We're going to break up this engagement into two different projects. Project number one is going to be to design it. So that's the design and the planning. Project number two is once we have that, let's go ahead and get a real clear scope of work done. Mm-hmm. And then I can give you something that's low risk for both of us. Does that make sense?
Yep, it really does. So just given that I'm not a web designer though, is there really like a kind of a proposal fee or something that's comparable to somebody who just does the writing?
Well, when I said design, I mean like map it out in terms of what pages and, you know, what content on each page. Okay. I didn't mean graphic design, yeah.
Sort of like a wireframe?
Yeah, but not even that. It's like, let's like plan outline. It.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an outline of how, you know, what pages, what each page is going to be about, roughly, you know, what's going to be inside there, how it's going to be structured.
Yeah.
That, all that kind of stuff. And then you charge a flat fee for that, by the way, because it's easy to scope out. And, you know, I wouldn't worry about making money or losing money on that. That's really kind of a loss leader.
Yeah.
I mean, I know our landscape architect, so they sell the plant products and then they do the installation as well. They charge us very little for the design because the real money is made on the job itself, right? Yeah. But you know, like you could charge, let's say $500 for that. And and then that's a real high value add deliverable.
Yeah.
Because, right? And that's going to give everyone direction. It's going to make your life easier secretly. It's a benefit to you.
Yeah.
And it's going to remove the risk, not just for them, but for you. So charge something nominal, $500 to $750, somewhere in there, depending on the size. And then it's, once you turn that in, I mean, you're the obvious choice to get the gig on the content, the copywriting piece.
Right. Great. That's a great idea.
So, hey, it's a learning experience. So chalk it up to that.
Yes, consider it chalked.
There you go.
Good luck. Good luck. Keep us posted. Awesome. Great question. And definitely one that I think a lot of people end up encountering this with lots of different ads. Websites tend to be probably the biggest, the primary culprit of that, but any project could really kind of get away on you sometimes. So, all right. Next question that was pre-submitted is from Eric Anderson. And I know Eric said in his submission that he was not going to be on the call today. So I'm going to read it and then maybe Ed, you and I can just chat about it. Eric says, I know some of the action plans address this, but I haven't had time to go through them yet. So I wanted to ask this now. I'm having trouble choosing between science, which I know well, and B2B software, which I don't know well at all. However, I'm halfway burned out on science, so I'm interested in renewable energy. And I've learned from John Morrow that B2B software is a lucrative niche. How is the market for science? What things should I be thinking about as I decide whether to focus on science or B2B software or both? Great question. And Ed, I think I'd love to just have a discussion because I had a couple of thoughts about this, but I'd love to, you had a lot of experience in the software industry. And I'd love to hear your thought on what Eric is asking about moving into B2B software, which he says he doesn't know at all. What are your thoughts on that as going from a completely different industry into something like B2B that is a lucrative industry?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is what we talked about a little bit earlier, Susan, which is the, I think that's taken a backward approach. You know, saying, okay, I'm here. Where else could I be?
Right.
That's the wrong approach. Because, you know, if you do that, you could be writing about blockchain and, you know, cause that's hot right now. Well, I don't know anything about that.
Right.
You know? So I think that's the wrong approach as opposed to taking a personal and professional inventory and starting from there.
Right.
And moving backwards from that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is looking at areas where they merge. So he has a background in science, let's just say, and I don't know if this is him, but let's say he's a scientist. He's got a scientific background. He's been a scientist. Okay, the intersection between science and software. So what about software for scientific companies? You know, as an example, right?
Right.
The other could be more in technology for scientific equipment, you know,
right.
Instrumentation,
right?
That sort of thing. So that's kind of related. You know, it's not quite software, but I think it's, you know, you got to find adjacent markets based on where, but start with where you are and what you already have, and then work backwards in concentric circles, as opposed to, you know, going somewhere way out there and trying to connect the dots.
Yeah.
That's too difficult. You can do that over time, by the way, but, you know, as a pivot, which is what we're talking about here, I recommend starting that way. Now, I happen to know, because I've had several coaching clients who were scientists or are scientists, and they worked, or work with companies that manufacture, sell, distribute scientific equipment, mm-hmm. or the equipment, products, services they sell really require somebody with a scientific background to write about them.
Exactly.
Because it's not that they're going to be super technical. It's just that you need to have that foundation in order to be able to write credibly about it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what, actually one of the things I really like for Eric is if I think about him having this scientific background, that makes him, that's a tremendous core differentiator as he starts to move into like, hey, you know what? I not only know how to write, but I'm a science geek. How cool is that? That's like a beautiful combination to go in and be able to position yourself in front of these people. So yeah, I like that. I like that approach.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool.
Wonderful. Awesome. Well, Eric, I hope that helped. I know you're not here, but hopefully you'll have a chance to listen to this and find that helpful. I'm going to move on to Dolores, and I'm going to take a quick look. I'm not sure. I don't think I saw Dolores's name here in the group, and we've got to just take another swing through here, but Dolores submitted a question. I'm going to go ahead and read it. I don't see her anywhere, so sorry, Dolores. I don't see you in the group. Let me see. So she says, for more than 7 years, I've been continuously working for a long-time regular client. Project managers change through the journey, and nowadays I know that they have retainer fees with other colleagues and professionals, but not with me. In fact, I barely receive some projects from them. They are growing a lot, and they have a prosperous business. Which ideas do you have that I could put into practice to retain a regular client or offer them a unique option so they can keep on trusting and sending work my way on for some of the projects? And I'd love to see some ideas about retainer fees specifically. So this is another interesting question because you're in a situation where you've been working with a client for some time and things are changing. What ends up happening sometimes is that we put our heads down and we're doing our thing and we're trying to take good care of the client, but we're not necessarily stepping back at times and looking at what is happening with my client. How are things changing? One of the things that I would recommend is to actually set time to have a meeting with your contact, Dolores, and say, you know what, I'd love to spend 15 minutes with you to just get an update on how things are happening. This is a great thing to do at the end of the year or the beginning of the year. We're still just kind of in the first quarter. It's okay. It doesn't really matter when you have this conversation. It's just an important thing to do in terms of, again, we're talking about client management. So Mr. Client, tell me a little bit about, I've noticed that there's some growth. Tell me a little bit about new initiatives. Tell me about what you see happening, especially in your department, your part of the company. What's going to be changing for you? Give me an idea of what your needs are moving forward. And if you don't, especially if you don't have a clear understanding of that. And if you already have an idea, then you want to come to that conversation ready to make some suggestions. And I think if you've been working with a client for a long enough amount of time, you could start simply by looking at what you've been doing for them and thinking, is there a better way to approach this? Is there a better way? I know we've been doing it this way and we're kind of maybe stuck in a rut here. Maybe there's a new way to do it, a new approach, something that you could recommend that might re-energize what the part of the program that you're working on. Sometimes I know a lot of people are talking like, for example, video blogs. It doesn't mean that you don't have a part. A video blog means that you help write the script as opposed to a regular blog, which is just a written article. So just changing the way you're thinking about what you're already doing to see if there's some value add for the services that you currently offer, but then to look outside of what you're doing and to see what others are doing, see if the company is moving in a direction that you might be able to make some strategic suggestions for them and just bringing more value and having that conversation that's not about, hey, what's the next project that I get, but really more, where is the company headed and how do you see and how can I support you in doing that in any new direction that you're headed? And Ed, I don't know if you had anything that you wanted to add.
Yeah, I completely agree, Susan. I think it sounds like, you've been working with them for 7 years, but they've had some changes in staff and those people have brought in the people they knew, right? So now you get some work, but very little. I think the fact that you have worked for 7 years for this organization, makes you extremely credible and they definitely have those conversations. And I want you to position yourself, Dolores, as a backup for them. So let's face it. Look, many times they have their trusted person. That's fine. You may not be able to necessarily tell them, to get more or get them to change. But what if you say, hey, that's great. Can I become your backup? in the moment that the first person suddenly can't come through, you're given an opportunity as a backup, and that's your opportunity to get back in and prove to that individual what you bring to the table. And who knows? I've seen situations where you're brought in as the backup and suddenly you do such great work that they say, you know what, maybe we want to give you more work. Maybe I should rethink this. So yeah, it's just being strategic that way and taking it one step at a time and positioning yourself as the backup.
Exactly. Yep. Wonderful. Well, Dolores, I hope that was helpful. I hope that gives you some food for thought, some ideas of ways to approach that with your client. And certainly feel free to post a question in the Facebook group if you have, if you have further questions around that. So awesome. And we have one question left here that was pre-submitted. This is Lois again, and I want to open it up to everybody. I'm going to read Lois's second question. She would like to know about working with marketing agencies. I'm currently doing sporadic work with one agency, but there are four other agencies doing similar work that I could ask for, that I could check in with. How would I go about doing this? Probably need to tell the current client and assure them that I wouldn't work on competing business campaigns. Interesting. Lois, I'm going to bring you back on just for a moment. Oops, I think you're there. Are you there, Lois?
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I didn't mean to monopolize the conversation.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I've got...
obviously right now.
This is a, no problem. So it sounds like there's a couple of agencies doing similar work. Tell me just a little bit about that in terms of similar work. In other words, does that mean they're all doing work within the same industry, or are they offering the same services? I just want to understand.
Yeah, it's mostly in the ag and food sector. So there's three or four marketing agencies in my area who provide like they're full service marketing agencies. So they do the online, print, everything.
Everything. Okay.
And yeah, so there's the one that I'm working with right now isn't necessarily in my niche, but I got to know them through other clients. So they would do all the graphic design and I would do all the writing for projects. And since then they've sort of tapped me for writing projects because it's really graphic design focused. So, and they bring in people from the outside for writing, and they've done that sporadically for me, but I kind of like to get into more of that kind of stuff because it's a bit more lucrative than, like I said before, with my journalism. But I'm a little hesitant about the marketing agency thing, like just going with marketing agencies, because I've heard some bad stories about, like, well, anyway, I'm just not sure how to go about doing that, or whether I should go there in the first place, right? So
sure. I know there's a couple of other folks that do work with more than one agency. I have worked with agencies in the past, and they were in separate parts of the country. So I didn't have to deal with it, and it really wasn't a competitive situation for me. So I was writing for these couple of industries through this agency and these couple of industries or clients through. There wasn't any real competition. And at the time, I think they were, again, physically, quite geographically far enough away from each other that there wasn't really any competitive concern. And that's the only experience I have had with that. Is this first agency an agency that you want to stay with, or would you be?
Actually, they've been very good to me.
Okay.
So, and
is it work that's helping to build your portfolio?
Not really. It's mostly ghostwriting right now, and it's website copy, but it's giving me different skills. So I've done, like, for example, video scripting, which I'd never done before. So
sure.
It's an entree into different skill sets, right? So
absolutely. Absolutely. No. And I got a same set of experience that you're describing, when I worked for the agencies is, it wasn't the best paying work, but boy, did I learn a lot. It really just taught me a great deal.
Yeah.
So it was worth it.
Yeah, I found with this agency, they know that I can write, and they figure if you can write this, you can write that, you can write the other thing, but they're completely different platforms, and it's like, yes, I can, actually, and I found out I can. So
right.
Anyway.
Good. I don't know if, Ed, if you have any thoughts on, in terms of the competitive aspect. Like I said, I don't have any direct experience with that. Is there anything?
Yeah, well, I think you can always look. You can always tell your agency, look, I'm looking to grow my business, and I wanted to get your blessing first. I don't want to create a conflict of interest, but I want to reach out to, you know, probably possibly X, Y, and Z. And see there's some opportunities that are non-competing and conflicting with what we're doing here. You might find is that they'll say, well, you know what, that might be okay, but I didn't know you were looking to grow your business. Why don't we explore some ways we could do more here?
Yeah, that's ideally what would happen.
Yeah, ideally, right? The other thing to consider is, you know, just like a stock portfolio, you don't want to put all your investment or your retirement savings in small cap stocks.
Right.
Like, you know, you don't want to put it all in Enron like all those people did, right?
Right.
The Enron.
Yeah.
So same thing here. You may want to diversify and maybe say, okay, you know what? This is my agency revenue. Let's go to some direct clients, you know, instead of just automatically reaching out. Because landing agency clients in that world is not necessarily going to be any easier than landing direct clients. So, I mean, if you're going to do it, if you're going to go prospecting purposefully, why not go after some direct clients as well?
Right.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, welcome.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lois. Thanks again. So we've got some nice questions today. Really great conversation to get us going here. And I see I do have a question. If you would, please type in the chat the capital Q so that we know that it's a question. And then type your question in, whatever you'd like us to help you with today. And I think, Dana, that you sent me yours privately in the chat. You said it just to me. So I'm going to read this question out loud. She actually landed a $15,000 project, and she celebrated that win earlier in the chat when we were talking. And how do I leverage that win to market the kinds of projects like the one I sold today? And it has 2 white papers, 10 blog posts, intro email campaign, and an infographic. I want these to be a regular gig. I also want to upsell on this package, adding a presentation and video for the senior VP that I'm helping to turn into a thought leader. How do I do that? Love it. Dana, I'm going to unmute you. Hello there. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Perfect. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Oh, is he there?
I just want to say.
Here we go. I was muted. Sorry. Good, doing good, Donna. Good to see you.
Good to be here. Yes, I've wanted for the longest time. I have been for a couple of years trying to get packages like this. And I got it working with Northern Trust, and they really liked my stuff. I started out writing blog posts, and they really liked my stuff. So then they had me write some white papers, and they liked those. And I had an idea for a specific type of audience. And it turned out one of the SVPs was trying to get herself to be a thought leader in that space. So she had me write a thought leadership white paper. And then I pitched this idea to her that I just got today. And what I figured out is through my experience with them, through my work as a graduate student at Georgetown, that I'm really good at helping thought leaders convey their messaging, get their ideas in a coordinated way out to the specific audiences they're looking to reach. Now, I work in the FIRE space, which is finance, insurance.
Yep. Real estate.
And I explained it because not everybody knows what that is. But I really want to do more of this. I want to have, I saw when I took the assessment for this for this coaching group, I ended up in, I guess, stage six. And I saw some of Ed's stuff, and I was like, I want to, that's it. I want to do that.
That's what I want to do. There you go.
That's what I want to do. And so a few days later, I get this, and I'm thinking, yeah, so now I know for sure this is what I need to do.
Great. Good for you.
How to, well, that pitched it probably about 2 or 3 months ago. But I want to do more of it. So how do I position myself for that? How do I leverage this kind of win? You know, those are the kind of questions I have. I want to be, I'm already doing most of the other things that are in the training, because I've been at this for a while, but I want to really do more of this and more just the thought leadership stuff. There's other things I can do, like I can do full-scale communication strategy, but this is more order taker stuff, even though there is some strategy involved. But I love this stuff. This is the stuff that I love doing. I love helping people who want to be a thought leader in a particular area become that using content and,
Wonderful. Yeah. Now you're a woman after my own heart. I did that for quite a while, and I still do that, is helping people to become thought leaders. And it is fun. It's really exciting and fun. It's a great thing to do, for work, because it's, you get to work with a higher level of person, in the sense of, you know, the writing can be really exciting. It's an exciting thing to do. So just a couple of thoughts for you. One thing that I would recommend is that you think a little bit about what are the key things that kind of create the foundation for a thought leader. And so what I'm thinking is their LinkedIn profile looking sharp and spiffy? Is it up to date? Do they have their own blog? What are the other kinds of things? Are they speaking? Are they out doing speaking engagements? What are the other kinds of things that create the foundation for a thought leader? And it might be in a couple different ways. So think about, you know, list all of the different things that a thought leader might do, you know, like that speak engagement or, you know, writing that white paper, maybe an ebook, maybe those kinds of things, and figure out here's a list of things, and maybe start with a starter package. Like one of the things that I do is offer, you know, we'll brush up your LinkedIn profile, and then I will ghostwrite a couple of articles for you as a starter package, so that we can figure out how do we work well together? First of all, does this click? Cause you really do have to, be able to work well with someone. If you're ghostwriting for them, you have to be able to work well with translating their wisdom and their experience into a really good article. So you want to do that. Maybe start with a smaller package and then create maybe three packages. Like here's your starter package. Here's one that takes that and then adds two or three things to it. And then there's that premium package that's doing all of this. You could, and then you could also turn around and say, you know what, I'll write video vlog scripts for you, that kind of thing. But just kind of brainstorm the different things that you know a thought leader might be involved in.
Okay.
And create a couple different packages, kind of play with that, play with pricing, think about, okay, how would I make that work? So it might not be as big as the contract that you just landed. But if you add up a couple of things, you're getting closer. So you're still bundling.
Right. One of the things that works to my advantage, two things, is my Georgetown graduate education.
Absolutely.
And I was in the corporate communications program there. And the fact that my capstone client is World Bank Group.
That's great.
Yeah, so I'm trying, and I've just worked really hard to get to the place where I can just talk to senior leaders. I'm at the SVP level and above with most of my clients, so I'm talking to the CMOs, CXOs, and the SVPs, and I want to keep it there. And for this side of the enterprise, I have another side that's just B2C stuff.
Sure,
I still top clients, but very different and very much easier to sell because I've been doing that for so long. But this is a little newer to me, and I'm trying to figure out how to use the sophistication that I've developed over time.
Right.
Connect with the right leaders.
Right.
So this is one way to start leadership. I like this idea of the packages.
Yep. The other thing you might want to think about too is, as an introductory, is to have a strategy session. And maybe that's complimentary, where it's, it gives you a chance to get to know this person a little bit and figure out, because I don't know about you, but sometimes you kind of get a feeling, you get that intuition going like, I don't think I can work with this person, or geez, this is a great client for me. We really clicked and we really connected. So maybe you create something that is, in this strategy session, I'll do a quick audit of your online profile. So look at all your all of your social media to see what you're looking like and how your activity level is, and then make some recommendations. And these are just really baseline. You know, your LinkedIn profile needs, you know, your summary needs to be updated. Look at social media from, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Right. See where they are and how they look. And then as a part of that, and then say a recommendation, so that you can also get a chance to understand what are they trying to accomplish.
Right.
So thought leader, but what does that mean to them? So in other words, what does being a thought leader mean to you? Does that mean getting published in, you know, writing for Huffington Post or writing for Forbes or something? You know, like what exactly does that level of success look like, so that you can understand what they're going for.
Okay, that's a good question. What is a thought leader? What does it look like for you?
Absolutely.
Tell them what you think it should be. You listen to what they see it as. They're not going to do anything that's going to make them uncomfortable anyway.
No. And it's interesting to me, and this is a great question, no matter whether you talk to a thought leader or any client that you're talking to, is like, what does success look like to you?
Right.
A successful, whatever it is, maybe it's a successful website or a successful blog series or whatever. What is it going to do? What would you want that to do for you? And then so that you can understand, geez, they don't really know what they're talking about. Maybe I need to help them, you know, educate them and say, you know what, that's really not going to accomplish what you want to accomplish. Or maybe they're spot on and it clicks and you say, yep, I can help you do that. Let's get started. So that first kind of strategy session is something that you can offer as a, you know, to start building on. Okay, so then I have these packages. I think, you know, here's the different packages I have that you could consider to get you started as a thought leader.
Okay, that's definitely very helpful. I'll probably ask more questions in the group.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
And maybe help some other people who may be thinking about the same thing and don't know how to do it.
Absolutely. And Ed, any thoughts from you? Anything?
Yeah, no, I think right on. You said some things that I didn't really think about. I would say one overarching thing, and I'll leave you with this, is one of the best ways to get more of that work is to position yourself that way and to cultivate referrals.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Yeah, is there a session, a segment, or a teaching, or something in the? I'm still new to this, so I don't know what it's called.
The academy.
Yeah, the academy. Is there something in there about? Because I'm not great at getting referrals, or I.
Oh yeah, yeah. We have a whole execution plan on how to get referrals with some really practical ideas.
Okay.
So. You'll see. I forget where exactly it's under, but I'll find it for you, and I'll put it in the chat.
Okay, that'd be perfect, because I definitely need to do that better, because I always get too excited about the work and forget all about the referrals, and I can't do that.
Ah, you're not alone. Don't worry.
Okay. I thought I was the only one who did that. Like, no, what are you doing? Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome.
Absolutely. Okay. We've got a couple more questions here. I'm going to see if we can get through to them. So let me see who's up next. Quick look here. Terry posted a question. I'm going to read this. She, again, posted to me privately. I've prospected a new startup and think I have a good shot at getting many content marketing projects, including market positioning, brochures, website updating, and product packaging. Competitor analysis, and that's going to be the first assignment. They aren't in a position to hire yet, which is good for her, and they have done a soft launch on Amazon, so they have done a soft a soft launch on Amazon of their first product and are making sales already. Her question is how best to approach my pricing with them. By project, once completed, retainer, hourly, some stock options or combination. They are privately held right now. Startups can be cash poor, but I want to figure out how best to get paid. This is Terry, and let me just take a quick look here. I can find you. Yes, you're there. I'm going to unmute you. Terry, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Well, this is an exciting opportunity. Startups have their challenges, but very exciting opportunity. It sounds like there's a lot of work here. And yes. Is it something? So tell me just a little bit more about what I want to make sure I understand where you are with them right now. It sounds like there's a lot of work. There's a lot of potential work. Have they made it clear that they don't have cash, or is this something that you're just kind of assuming because they're a startup?
I'm not quite sure. I'm assuming because they're a startup, but here where I'm at right now with the process is I have spoken to the VP of marketing and sales several times. He likes me, and I had an interview with their IT guy on Friday, and according to the IT guy, it went pretty well. He told the VP he went all IT on me, and I was able to keep up, so I think that was a good feedback.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Well, this is, it's interesting because you've mentioned a couple of things in your question about, you know, retainer, hourly, stock options, that kind of thing. I think that to test the waters, I would start small with this company because you certainly, I could tell you that I have been burned personally by thinking, yeah, you know, this is going to be a great opportunity. And I dove in and I offered too much. I did too much. And then, you know, it just got ugly. So I just want to, you know, maybe suggest that you start small. So if you're looking at, let me see, there was a competitor analysis. You said that might be the first assignment. Start with that.
Yeah.
Don't bundle anything. Do one thing at a time and figure out what their needs are. Find out what their, you know, what it looks like for them, what they want, you know, what their vision is of, you know, if I do this, what's it going to look like? And then go ahead and price that up but be clear that this is I want to start by with this project and make sure that we're a good fit, that I could do the work that you want and, you know, that we can work well together. I mean, that's always you want to be able to establish that without, especially with where it's a startup. Let's make sure that they can pay you what you're worth.
Okay. And then in terms of what I'm worth, I did go through the pricing and I didn't see competitor analysis directly, but I'm thinking it falls into the research paper or white paper kind of category.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be fair.
That would be fair. So,
and until you get the details from them about, you know, what exactly do you want it to include? How exhaustive is that? A competitor analysis can be, you know, can require a lot of research. So, that's the kind of thing, like, then you've got to step back and say, okay, is this project maybe even too big for them? And don't hesitate, too, to ask, so, you know, what's your budget? Have you established a budget for this type of project? And where are you with that? Give me a sense of what your budget is.
They haven't. And that's where they're at with that. And that's why they haven't hired anyone yet. They're not in that position to hire. Like I said, that's good for me because then I can come in as a freelancer. Otherwise, if they hired someone full time, there may not be anything.
I understand.
To outsource.
Right.
But like some of the other speakers have already said, if you get in there and you can prove to them you can get the work done, hopefully they don't have a need to go out and hire someone full time. You're just able to continue with the client getting their work done for them.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I would definitely start small, you know, maybe do a couple of small things, see how it goes. And like I said, make sure that you can kind of test the waters. Each of you can kind of do a trial project first and start small. And then once they're wowed by you, then you can say, okay, let's talk about different ways to package what you need so that it can support you moving forward and then get into a retainer type of situation. But you don't want to blow them out of the water with the very first project and have it be a price tag that they simply, you know, can't afford, that they're just, you know, especially if they're not accustomed to hiring a writer, you want to kind of take it one step at a time.
Yeah. And they did. I'm going to meet with a guy on Thursday, and he already said he didn't have any idea what these services would cost or what I would charge, and he wanted to talk to me about that.
Okay. Okay. And that's something where you might want to have some ranges prepared. So a typical white paper, depending on the length, if it's up to 10 pages, it's between this and that. You know, get, just so you can give them some ranges so that you're not, again, you're not painting yourself into a corner with a price. But that you, you know, depending on the amount of work, research involved, it can be anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $5,000 or whatever a comfortable range is for you. But have some ranges prepared so that you can talk about that.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Ed, any other thoughts on startups that anything to caution her?
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. The one thing I would always avoid, guys, is stock options, profit sharing, future income, that sort of thing. I've seen that out of 100 times, seen that work once or twice. But seriously, it's so rare that it works out for you that I can just basically just tell you without knowing any of the details, don't do it because it's not going to work out. So always, you know, our business model is such that we really can't afford to do that. Other businesses can. I think it's a great business model, but not for what we do. Okay. So just steer clear of that.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you.
Agreed. Great. All right. We have one more quick question. I'm going to see if we can squeeze this in. I know we're going a little over time here, but we had a good group and a lot of great questions. And this one is from Suzanne. And she says she's been working with a few digital marketing agencies. They won't come up higher than $170 for a 1,000-word article. I write both for them and for their clients. I've tried to go higher, but with no luck. Should I just dump them and approach corporations directly? So hold on. Let's see if I can find you, Suzanne. There you are. I'm going to unmute you. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about this. How long have you been working for them?
I've been working with them for about 3 years. And, you know, I actually like dumped them about a year ago.
Oh. okay.
But I like the content marketing manager and, but it's just too low to, you know, if it takes me 5 hours to write something.
Oh.
Yeah, you know.
That's painful.
Yeah. So, anyway, I was thinking of going back to them. You know, and they are, like you said before, they are good in the sense that you learn a lot. And so that's good. But I need to get higher up with them or should I go? I just have a gap in some of my clients right now. And I thought, well, I could go back to them and, you know, just get something, you know, I just finished a great big project. So, you know, I'm kind of trolling around for work.
Gotcha.
And, so I think I should just ignore them though. And like, I've never directly approached a corporation. I've mostly get it in through my website SEO. I get my work in through
having
smart SEO on my website, but it just has seemed to have a lull right now. So
gotcha.
What do you think about the marketing agencies?
Well, I have to tell you that I did the same thing earlier in my writing freelance experience is that I worked for a couple of agencies. It was for peanuts. I mean, it just, the amount of work. And if you're anything, you know, as writers, we want to do our best work. Doesn't matter how much we get paid. You know, you're just like, oh, I got to make this really perfect. And you put a lot of time
that's
and effort. Yeah. So, and that's kind of common. And so you've got to figure out at what point is this no longer a learning for me? Am I ready to move on? And I remember, a woman that, a colleague of mine, I was very close to the woman who was the director. She's a good friend. And so I reached out to her and said, look, you know, I've picked up some other work and I think I'm going to, I gave them like, I don't know, a couple, I was doing a lot of ghost writing for blogs for a number of their companies, for their clients. And I did learn a lot, but I was like, it's just sucking up every minute of my time.
Right,
and I'm making $500, you know.
Yeah.
After all that work, I make $500. Great. You know, it's just, can't do it anymore. So, I think that's the thing that you have to kind of judge it by, have I is there usefulness? Have I gotten all the usefulness out of this particular experience that I think I'm going to? And after 3 years, you may be there. That may be just, you know what, I need to make room for other agencies that are going to pay me more.
Right. Okay. Okay. Good to know. Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Awesome.
You know, Susan, the thing with the comments, with the marketing and prospecting is like buying an insurance policy, right? So one way to lower the risk of being in a tight situation is just to do consistent marketing. And that takes care of so many of these things, right? But let's face it. I mean, look, this is no, I'm not trying to shame anyone. It's just that it does, right? That gives you a lot of freedom and flexibility. And then the other thing is, you know, when somebody can't or won't go beyond a certain level, you know, for work that, you know, you could get more of, then it's putting yourself in a situation where you can, you know, move on. And you may not be able to do it overnight, but, I don't want anyone here. I mean, gosh, the academy is called the Get Better Clients Academy, right? There are definitely better clients out there and a ton of them. The whole idea is to move up that ladder so that you're in a situation where you're getting, you know, you're earning a good living from clients who like and respect you. And that is a totally doable situation. Like you said, when you let go of a client that no longer serves you, you create a void and nature hates a vacuum. You will fill that space with new and better clients. Of course, you got to do the work. Just wishing it, you know, is not going to do it. But it's a great place. And you know, it's guys, it's a process. You know, that's we're giving you great tools and training here in this program for how to do that. But I just want everyone to know, and Suzanne as well, that's totally doable, and things get much better once you're there.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, I know we're over time here, but I'm going to just put up if there's anyone, a few folks have left, and that's fine. But if for those of you who are still with us, if you would type a capital T in the chat, just let us know what's been valuable today, what's been a really good takeaway for you. In our discussion, we have covered a lot of territory, a lot of different things that we got talking about, from managing clients and talking about strategy, how to pivot. We have talked about a lot of different things here, managing scope creep, really a great diverse set of topics. So if there's anything that stood out for you, please let us know in the chat, a capital T, and let us know if there's anything in particular. It's always great to hear from you folks as to what was the value during this discussion today. Let me see. Melissa says, careful agreements. Indeed, and scope of work. Terry says, managing a new client with pricing and scope creep. Shanna found the discussion about pivoting of value, and Suzanne said, you both seem knowledgeable. I'm new, but I'm going to listen to the recorded sessions now. Well, thank you. And Donna says, listening to answers to everyone else's questions. It is amazing how sometimes these things open up things for us, and that's what Ed and I try to concentrate on, making sure that our answers are specific to help you with your problems, but also that are broad enough that they'll apply to everyone on the phone. And we really try to focus on making sure that we're covering things that how do we kind of apply this to maybe the industry that you're in or a problem that you might be facing. And then Donna says the design fee method of two-stepping the proposal process for a project to help manage the creep and scope. So yeah, that's a great suggestion. Makes it easy. Lots of confirmation for me around my business practices. Also, Donna said the same thing. All right. And Peggy said, this was awesome. First time here and you're new to the academy. I'm actually a little overwhelmed just starting out. But I didn't feel it was over my head. Thanks. Good. I'm glad we were able to keep it at a level that was helpful for you.
Yeah. Welcome, Peggy.
Yeah, great. Kelly says, I joined late with the Q&A. Be included in the replay. Yes. Ed, is the Or the,
yeah, you know what? I let me double check that. But we often try to include a list of the questions that were asked. Now, keep in mind, so that we just opened up these coaching calls to everybody in the academy. Right. So I need to check with my team to see if they're still doing that. I should know that. I'm ashamed to admit that I don't. So we'll see. I'll get back to you. I'll let you know. But in the past, you know, when we had, because typically these were very small group calls, we would just include a list of the questions that were asked. But, you know, since we had 27, 30 people on the line, I'm not sure.
Yeah. That was a lot. That was a lot today. So that's great. And someone else, it doesn't have a name, but it's your first Academy schedule and you enjoyed it. You said, excellent and glad you joined. So are we. So welcome. And then Monica said, hearing some package ideas other writers offer is also helpful. And you're new to the Academy. So welcome, Monica. Glad you're here. Kelly says, thanks for checking. I'm hoping so, but understand that there are limitations. Great dialogue, even though I joined late. Good, good, good. And then the last thing we ask is there any action item based on what we talked about or anything that kind of came up for you that you think you're going to try, any action item that you're going to be working on in the coming week or two? Type a capital A in the chat. Let us know. And if give you a minute to do that. Donna says, go back to my game plan and keep learning and growing. Yay, good for you. I forgot how valuable it is to consume new or even review old trainings. Not yet ready prospects await. Yes, they do. Good for you. And assessments. I'm glad that that was helpful. It's wonderful to position yourself as a consultant and a resource for strategy with a new or potentially new client. So, yeah, assessing their situation can be really helpful. Scoping and pricing the competitor analysis. Great, Terry. Glad that was helpful. And Donna says, taking massive action because I need to build up my client list. Yay. Keep us posted in the Facebook group. Let us know how that goes as you progress. All right. Well, I think that's it. This was terrific. Thank you all for being here. This will be, the recording will be available. It'll be posted, I think, in the next day or two. So look for that if you want to listen again, or if you weren't able to join us, just look in the Facebook group and the team will be posting that very soon. But have a great rest of your week and a great month, and we'll talk to all of you again soon.
Yeah. Goodbye, everybody.